Okay, we're beginning here, 8 lines down on the top of Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, Bayrish Lakish. Hamishtachaveh ledekel, a person who bows down to a palm tree, lulavo mahu the mitzvah. Can you use the lulav that comes from that palm tree for a mitzvah? And as Rashi points out, this is built on the previous Gemarot, which is, Im Tim Salomar, if you're willing to say Yesh Nehavad b'michubar itzel gevoa, that when it comes to Hekdesh and things associated with Hekdesh, over there, even though it's michubar, there's still a din of ne'evat, even though for hedyot, as we've already determined, when something is michubar, there's no din of avodah zarah, and it's mutar b'hana'ah. Nevertheless, there still is a din of ne'evat with regards to michubar. If that's what you concluded, then we have the following question, which is, what's the din with regards to the lulav for a mitzvah? And the Rabbein Elchanan explains it even more so, which is, my mitzvah. What's the din of a mitzvah? Ki legevoa dami upasul. Do we consider a mitzvah something that's akin to hekdesh, and therefore it's asur? Oh, lo. Or maybe we consider it to be something that a lay person does, and the person performing the mitzvah is a hedyot, and therefore it's not subject to these rules. So even if you would say that nevad b'mechubar is problematic for hekdesh, or maybe even for makshirei korban, but nevertheless, when it comes to a mitzvah, that's not a korban, that's not even a makshir the korban, but it is something that is kodesh in the sense that you perform a mitzvah and something that you're doing towards Hashem. So do we say that's so similar or similar enough to hekdesh and makshir hekdesh, therefore it would be problematic? Or do we say that it is done by a hedyot and therefore it's mutar behana'a? Now the Gemara narrows the scope of the question based on the assumptions, which is be'ilanch nato mitchila lekach. If the tree was planted from the outset for that purpose of avodah zarah, loti ba'ilach. That is not even a question. Tafilu hedyot nami asur, as we're going to see in the upcoming Mishnayot. But as we know from yesterday's daf, that when you plant a tree for the purposes of avodah zarah, that tree, according to everyone, is problematic. Is asur bana even for a hedyot. So if it's asur bana for hedyot, certainly for a mitzvah, it's not going to qualify. Question arises in a case where it's a tree that is planted originally for no avodah zarah purposes, but later was co-opted or used by avodah zarah or for avodah zarah. Believe it, the Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda loti baylach. According to Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, who says that ashera is also asur, then there's no question because that feel like yo nami asur. Because even for a layperson that's problematic, then certainly for a mitzvah it's going to be problematic. Kiti baylach alibed derabanan. Your question is really going to arise according to the Shita of the Rabbanan who say that is mutar lehedyot, then your mitzvah might. What's the consideration when it comes to a mitzvah? Is that considered to be problematic? Because mi ma'is klape gavoa, it is something that's considered to be disgusting or unbefitting doing a mitzvah or something that is presented towards a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Although, or maybe there it's not. Maybe it's only when you're dealing with real hekdesh. Or only when you're dealing with real issues of makshirei korban is it problematic. When you're dealing with a mitzvah, that's not considered to be ma'us. And as the Bali Tosafot point out, you could have asked this question or phrased this question in many different ways. You could ask it according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda for the Ikar. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, at least at this point in the Gemara, thinks that only the Tosefet is asur and not the Ikar. You could have asked according to him, the Ikar, what's the story? Or it could be asked, even according to him, if the tree grew by itself, where everybody agrees that tree is not subject to the din of avodah zarah behedyot, but nevertheless, maybe over there you'd have a problem for nevad for mechubar for hekdesh, and then also for mitzvah. So he gives you different permutations of what the question could be. The Gemara just narrowed it in scope and wanted to ask the question within the position of the Rabbanan. The other thing that the Bali Tosafot point out is that the Gemara in Sukkah already deals with this in some way, and therefore it's somewhat problematic as to why the Gemara is asking the question here. If we have some pretty strong statements by Rova and Gemara and Sukkah, which would have answered this question, which is, Ishlakit itle shapir the Rova. Ishlakish does hold of Rova's position, and Rova's position says that dulav shalavadat kochavim lo ito. You're not allowed to take a lulav that derives from avodah zarah. Bim natal, yatsa. If you do take it, you're yotzei b'diavad. So that basically answers the question of Reish Lakish. Don't take it l'chatchila, but b'diavad, you can take it. The hatamari kodem bitol. Over there, that's before they were mevatol the avodah zarah. U'b'diavad yatsa. And there, nevertheless, even though there was no bitol avodah zarah, you still b'diavad yotzei. The mitzvah lav lehenot nitnu. The principle that Rava says is that mitzvot aren't for getting hana'ah. And since you are doing a mitzvah whereby you're not getting hana'ah, and the isur is hana'ah from avodah zarah, that means that you can use it in order to be yotzei the mitzvah. Aval hocha mayri achar bitul. Over here it's different because it's after the bitul of the avodah zarah, so that might actually be better than the situation that Rav was speaking about in the Gemara in Sukkah. And therefore, the Balitos would say, Rish Lakish's question is a Lachatkhila question. He agrees with Rava that Bidiyabad would be fine if it were a Bodhisattva even. But now his question is, when it's not a Bodhisattva, because there was Bittul over here, can you use this Lachatkhila? And that's the nature of Rish Lakish's question, which is that it's built on top of the assumptions of Rava according to the Balayat Tosafot. Although the Ramban over here and the Balayat Tosafot in that Sugya in Sukkah say that there actually is a Machloket between Rish Lakish and Rava, and that Rish Lakish asked his question even about Bidiyabat. That is this Asur, meaning Asur the Gamre. And that means whether it's Yom Tov Rishon, Yom Tov Sheni, meaning that this is considered to be a question that is asking what Rava already asked. And that means that Rish Lakish would be arguing on that position of Rava. And yes, he doesn't agree with Rava that Bidiyabat should be okay. That's exactly his question over here. Is it okay? Maybe even okay Lechatchila. It's problematic. Maybe it's even problematic. Bidiyabad. In that way, Rish Lakish's question could be both where there is no bitul, and he is questioning Rava's assumption there in the Gemara in Sukkah, or it could be even after there is a bitul, and even despite the fact that there's bitul, he might believe that when it's asur, it's even asur bidiyabad, and Rish Lakish and Rava don't necessarily have to be reconciled. And then, Kianta Rav Dimi Amar, Basherash Bitla Kami Baile. Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael. He said the question of Rish Lakish was not about Tamishtachavel the Dekel the Lulavo. Rather, the question was about an Asherah that was Mivutal. The question was, Yesh Dichui Eletzum Mitzvot, or Ein Dichui Eletzum Mitzvot? Do we say that there's a concept of Dichui that exists by Mitzvot, or is there no such concept? The concept exists in Korbanot with regards to Kodashim, and that is in an animal that is ra'oi to go on the Mizbeach, and then for whatever reason loses the capacity to be put on the Mizbeach, because if something happens to it, some Isur comes about, and later on it's freed of that Isur. That's what's called Dichui. There's a period of time where it was disqualified from going to Mizbeach. You can apply it to Korbanot. You actually can apply it to people as well, where a person becomes disqualified from bringing the Korban. Does that ruin his capacity to bring the Korban that he designated already because he was pushed out for a period of time where he was incapacitated or disqualified? That's called Dichui B'mitzvot. You find it by also the Dam of the Korban that's already ready to be sprinkled on the Mizbeach. When something happens that causes it to be disqualified for a period of time, does that make it that you can no longer use it? So that's a question in general with regards to Korbanot. And now the Gemara wants to know, does it have application by Mitzvot as well? Which is here, there's a period of time in which the Asherah would be disqualified from being utilized towards a mitzvah. So then, during that period of time that it was disqualified, does that make it that it's now permanently disqualified and it cannot be reinstated to be used for a mitzvah? There might have been a period of time where it was mutar to be used for a mitzvah, then it became an asherah which disqualified it, and now it became mutar again. Is that period of time in which it was disqualified make it that dichui b'mitzvot, that it's pushed off and there's no longer the capacity, there's no longer the ability to use this for a mitzvah? Now, according to Rav Dimi, it would seem before there is bitul, he thinks that it's completely asur. And if that's the case, then Rav Dimi, first of all, argues on Rish Lakish, or what we brought in as the question from Rish Lakish directly, because he believes that if it was avodah zarah, it's no question that it's problematic. It's only now that there's bitul, is there even a question to decide about. And that would mean kal v'chomer that he argues on Rava in the Gemara and Sukkah. For the Balei Tosafot, you could say that Rish Lakish and Rava can be reconciled, and even possibly here, Rav Dimi can be reconciled, because the Balei Tosafot set up Rish Lakish as a case where it's already bitul, and therefore Rish Lakish and Rav Dimi are speaking about the same instance of when it was mevutal. But if it was not mevutal, then they would possibly agree with Rava, or they might disagree with Rava. But for the Ramban and the Balei Tosafot and Sukkah, it's clear here that Rav Dimi argues on Rish Lakish, and that means that kal v'chomer that he argues on Rava and the Gemara in Sukkah. So Tifshel Dei Miditnan should be able to answer it from the Mishnah that deals with Kisui Adam. Kisau v'nitgaleh, patur min l'chasot. If a person covered the dam of a chayar and oaf, which the Torah requires after the shechita of a chayar and oaf, the blood that spills on the ground has to be covered over. It's called Kisui Adam with dirt. If you already covered it over and then the wind came or something happened and blew it off, you don't have to cover it again. You did the mitzvah. If it's uncovered afterwards, that doesn't eliminate or undo the mitzvah that was there. Kisau ruach, if it was covered by itself, meaning that there was any human being didn't go and cover it, the wind blew the dirt onto the dam and then it got covered. He's still required to cover it. That's only true if the blood became exposed again. If it's not exposed again, then patur min chasot. What can he do? It's already covered. He can't then cover it again. So only if it gets exposed will he then have a mitzvah to go and cover it up. If it gets reopened or re-exposed, why does that change anything? Once the mitzvah was already knocked off, then it should be knocked off permanently. From here you would conclude, ein dichui etzel mitzvot. The mitzvot are not pushed off. When a mitzvah gets, quote-unquote, disqualified, or is impossible to take care of at a period of time, that does not make it dachui, does not push it away from being able to do the mitzvah afterwards. In this case, when he shechted the animal, he needed to cover the dam. The wind blew something onto it, which then made it impossible for him to cover the dam. So then, if you would claim there was dichui b'mitzvot, then even if it became uncovered afterwards, it wouldn't matter, because the mitzvah was already pushed off. It became impossible at some point. That means that the mitzvah is no longer relevant to this individual. Now you see here that, according to this, the wind blew it, and then it got uncovered by itself again, that you do have to do the mitzvah. That shows you that ein dichui b'mitzvot. The mitzvah don't get pushed off, even though there was a period of time in which the mitzvah could not be accomplished, or there was some disqualification during that period of time. Nevertheless, when it becomes available again, you have to do the mitzvah, and ein dichui b'mitzvot. That would be the answer to your question over here. Ein dichui b'mitzvot. And that means that the lulav of the asherah, that's nitbatel, at this point in time, should be totally fine to be used. So the Gemara says, the Rav Papa gufei ibayile. Rav Papa's din is exactly the question that Rav Dimi said the Rish Lakish was asking over here. Mifsha pshita le, the Rav Papa, it was straightforward for Rav Papa, dein dichui etzel mitzvot. That there was no dichui etzel mitzvot. Lo shna lekula, but lo shna lechumra. Doesn't matter whether that's a kula or lechumra. O dilma, spuke misfakpe le, o lechumra amina lekula lo amina. Or maybe he has a safek about whether there is dichui etzel mitzvot. And over there, by kisui adam, we just go to chumrah in order to take care of the situation. You have two possibilities. Either Rav Papa knows for certain that ain't dichui b'mitzvot, and that's why you'd be chayav by the kisui adam when it gets uncovered to recover it, but it also would imply over here that the lulav would be totally mutar to use. Or you can say that Rav Papa was uncertain as to whether dichui b'mitzvot applies. By kisui adam, he says you may as well cover it over, because if there is no dichui b'mitzvot, then you should be covering it. If there is dichui b'mitzvot, then you're doing nothing, and that's fine as well. But that's the chumrah. Over here, we're going to be makil and allow him to take the lula for a mitzvah. Who says that he would apply ein dichui b'mitzvot over here, even the kula? So that's the nature of the question. If you look in the Maram Mironshenberg, he points out that it's clear in the Gemara in Sukkah that Rav Papa does believe that there is ein dichui b'mitzvot, whether it's the kula or whether it is the chumrah, and he proves that from a number of Rishonim, including Rashi over there and Yerushalmi, that that's the case. From our Gemara, it's unclear as to whether this is a question of Rav Papa, or this is a question that we have, but Rav Papa had no question here. So from our Gemara, you could be either way. This could be read as a question in Rav Papa's position, and we don't know what Rav Papa thinks. Does he think it absolutely, or does he just think it the chumrah? And then we are then trying to figure it out. That's what the Gemara now leaves at the end of this, which is, Teiku, it's left as unresolved. So that would be then that Rav Papa's whole position is uncertain. But the way the Gemara of Meiron Shinberg reads it in the other places and then wants to apply it here is that, according to Rav Papa, he has no question that there ain't dichui b'mitzvot. This is the question of Rav Dimi in Reish Lakish, and he's saying now that I have that question. Rav Papa has no question about it, but he says, I'm not sure whether Rav Papa always applies, whether there's a safek about Rav Papa's position, and therefore he would go to Chumrah, but not necessarily the Kula. So, boy, Rav Papa. Now we have a question, Rav Papa. Mishtachavela behema, person who bows down to an animal. Samra, maulet chelet. The wool that's on this animal, can it be used for techelet? Techelet demai. Which techelet are you speaking about? E techelet de koanim. If you're speaking about the techelet that goes into the big day kahuna, haino baya de Rabbi Bar Chama. That's the exact question that Rabbi Bar Chama had on the previous daf. And that Rashi notes over here as well is the big day kahuna letzorech avodah. You need to make big day kuna because of avodah. They're a prerequisite for a kohen doing avodah. Kamivale machshirei korban ke korban to amu olo. Is a machshir of a korban considered be like a korban? Beim tim zolomer ku korban to amu. If you think it is like a korban, heichad nishtane. When this change has happened to it, kishetzovim oto yeshinui benevad hatirol gvolo. Does a change in something that is a nevad have a classification as being like the original item? Or is it already differentiated where there's no problem? And those were the two questions that Rami Bar Chama asked. He asked, Yesh ne'avad b'mechubar. And then we saw, Im tim salomar, Yesh ne'avad b'mechubar, Etzel gvoa makshiri korban kukurban dami olo. And then later on, towards the end of yesterday's daf, he asked about shinoi. When there's a change in the item, what happens in that change? Does that change then eliminate the problem? Or does the problem persist even after there's a change? So that would be the exact same question as Rami Bar Chama asked before. if you're going to use the tefillah to make tzitzit, which is a mitzvah, how do buy the Reish Lakish? That's the question that Reish Lakish asked before. Now, the Gemara here says that it's like Reish Lakish's question, but it's not exactly like Reish Lakish's question, as the Balei Tosfot point out, because Nakad Reishim Lakish Mishim to the mitzvah, he kamo b'tzitzit. Reish Lakish's question was about a mitzvah, and so too, this is about a mitzvah, but they're not identical. The Habi Chalal Bayi the Rami Bechami, because it also has a portion of Rami Bechami's question in it, Shari Nishtaneh Yidei Tviyah, because the spinning of the thread or the wool and the dyeing of the wood include a shinoi. So even if you're speaking about Tchilat of Tzitzit, which is a mitzvah, it's not like Reish Lakish who's taking the lulav straight off the tree that they worshipped, and there's no shinoi over there, because that's just a question directly about mitzvah. This combines both Reish Lakish's issue about the mitzvah, as well as Rami Barchama's question about shinoi or nishtaneh. If the item has changed, does that have impact on the status of the item? So the Balei Tosfot see this as being a combination question of both Reish Lakish and Rami Barchama. They picked Reish Lakish because he had to speak about mitzvah. On the other hand, there are some that want to suggest that the shinoi here is not significant enough to make it similar to Rami Barchama's question. Over here, he's speaking about the spinning of the wool, the dyeing of the wool, both of which are things that technically can be returned to their original state, and there aren't things that are considered to be a shinoi, where what was before was wool and now it's not wool, it's wool and wool, and therefore they think that the shinoi here is not significant enough to be part of the question. The only real question is similar to Reish Lakish's question, which is whether a mitzvah can be accomplished with something that was once ne'evad. Ein ochanami. Gemara says, yes, the question is a question we've asked already. D'lo ava mi ba'ile. He didn't need to ask the question. Ba'adiko ba'ile. So then why did he ask the question? Ha'mishum de'ika mili achrenaita. He had something else that he wanted to ask on top of that. The first question was, tzamra mahu l'techelet. The question of, what's the story with techelet? But then it is, karneha mahu l'chatzutzrot. What is the story with its horns? Can they be used for the chatzutzrot in the Mikdash? Shokeha, its thigh bones, mahu lechalilim, can they be used for flutes? Bnei me'eha, its intestines, mahu lepa'arot. Rashi over here says, pe'arot are nimim shel kinor, they're the strings of the lyre. And he says, cords, belaz, they're cords, they're the strings that make up the instruments. Are those allowed to be used from this animal? So in truth, there is nothing new in this question. It could either be the question of Rami Barham or the question of Reish Lakish, but Rav Papa wasn't asking anything new here. He was just using this as part of a platform to get to the next question, which he's asking about is, what can you use this animal for the instruments that would be used in the Beit HaMikdash? According to ones who say that the song that accompanies the Korban, that Iker Shira, is through the Kelim, through the instruments, then Loti Bailach de Vadaya Sir. Over there it's clearly problematic. That'll be definitely a sore, because that's Rami Barchama's question, which is Ar Makshiri Korban, Ki Korban Dami. And there's also Shinui over here, and that we concluded should be Asurim. So that would be the conclusion here as well, that it'd be Asurim. Bikiti Bailach, the question is Alibin the Mandamari Kashira Bepe. The Levim song that accompanies the Korbanot, the major part of that is the singing or the voices of the Levim. So now, Besume Kal Ba'almahu, are the instruments simply an accompaniment to the singing of the Levim, so they enhance their singing? Umaitinan, and therefore you could use them because they're not even Makshire Korban. They're even a step below that. They're just an assist to the Makshire Korban. Odilma Filuhachi Asir. Maybe even so, it's still Asur, as Rashi says over here. Mi'ise. It's still maus. Even if you're willing to say that when it comes to a mitzvah like lulav to use that, even though it was quote unquote maus, here when it's dealing with a korban itself, that's something that's even more maus. It's only interesting over here that Rashi is willing to differentiate between lulav and korban over here, because in the Gemara and Sukkah, many of the Rishonim and the Achronim point out that there is this concept that the Nanuim, or the bringing of the Lulav, has some sort of form of Ritzui, like a Korban. And that sometimes the Lulav and the Korban are equated in some ways, and therefore there would be the same din for Lulav as it would be for a Korban, like by Mitzvah Baba Avera. And over here, also by the case of Mius, Rashi over here is willing to differentiate and say that possibly by Lulav, it would be okay. And even if you say it is okay, you might still say by the Korban, where it's not a Korban, it's not a Makshire Korban, but it's an assist to the Makshire Korban that's still too ma'us to be involved because it's associated with a Korban. Now the Balei Tosfot raised two issues over here. The first of which is, the Gemara Menachot tells us that the chatzutzrot were made out of silver, not from the horns of an animal. Number two is, there's a Mishnah at the end of Kinim that says that an animal, when it's alive, only makes one sound. After it's dead, it makes seven sounds, and that is based on all the instruments that can be made for it for use in the Beit HaMikdash, including the chatzutzrot. So the problem is, are the chatzutzrot made from the horns of the animal, or are the chatzutzrot made from kesef made out of silver? The Baal Tosafot would say that the Mishnah in Kinin is not a problem, because you use the Gemara in Bamei Medikim in Shabbat that says that the words chatzutzrot and shofar get conflated many times. And sometimes when it says chatzutzrot, it really means shofar. And what they mean over there is to be used for the shofarot on Rosh Hashanah. But in our case over here, you can't answer that, because the Gemara here says it's dealing with a makshirei korban, or an assist to makshirei korban. It's clearly not talking about the shofarot of Rosh Hashanah. So the Baal Tosafot give an answer that there is a difference between the chatzutzrot that belong to the Kohanim and the chatzutzrot that belong to the Levim. There were the trumpets that have to be made out of silver. Those are the chatzutzrot of the Kohanim, and those are me'akev the korban. If you don't have them, if you don't blow them, then the korban is not good, because it says utkatim bechatzutzrot in the pasuk in Balotcha that tells you have to blow the chatzutzrot over the korbanot. That's me'akev, but those are the chatzutzrot of the Kohanim. There's a separate group of chatzutzrot that belong to Levim, which was part of their shira associated with the korban, which first of all is not me'akev the korban, but also those chatzutzrot were made out of horns, not made out of silver. And that way he resolves the different mentions of chatzutzrot over shas, that when it says that it needs to be silver, or it's me'akev, that's dealing with the kohanim, and when it's speaking about the horns coming from the karnot, and it's something that's not me'akev, those are the chatzutzrot of the Levim. In the end, he brings also from the Rabbeinu Yehuda another distinction, which is the requirement of Menachot that the chatzutzrot be made out of silver was only the chatzutzrot of Moshe Rabbeinu. That was the first chatzutzrot that were made. But after that point in time, they could be made even from the Karanot, and it brings a proof from the Tosefta that they used to use chatzutzrot of gold as well, which does not conform to the Pasuk in Balotcha that demands that they be made out of silver, and that's why it differentiates between the chatzutzrot of Moshe Rabbeinu and the chatzutzrot that were used in the Mikdash. And therefore then you could argue that the chatzutzrot that we're speaking about are even the chatzutzrot of the Kohanim, because they could also be made from karnot. So those are two different ways to resolve what seemingly is a stira between chatzutzrot being made out of metal versus the chatzutzrot being made out of the karnot over here. Now, Bai Rabba, Hamishtachaved Mayan, person who bows down to a spring of water, Meimav Mahu Linisachim, can you use the waters for the Nisoch HaMayim that is in the Mikdash? My kami baile. What is the question here? Ilema le baboa kasagit. If he's bowing down to his own image, his reflection in the water, odilma le maya kasagit, or maybe he's bowing down to the water, and that's the question here. When a person bows down to the mayan, is he worshipping himself and the reflection there? Or is he worshipping the water itself? And that's the question. Is it going to be used for nisoch hamayim? The mitibay le sefer lehejot. Then why do you have to ask the question about hektesh? You could ask the question about a pitcher, a decanter, water of a layperson would have the same question. Because if it is a hejot bowing down to it, then it would be talush, and it would be something that is asur even for a hejot. It would be asur banah. So why ask the question in terms of hektesh? You can ask the question in terms of a hejot. So the olam, the maya kosogit. Now we know for sure he's bowing down to the water. That's not the question here. The question he has is, Lamayak de Kamei Kasagit, is he bowing down to the water that's right in front of him now? And that water, Kamei Kamei Azdu, that water already's moved on, and the water that's here now is totally new water, and that where what he worshipped is already gone. Udema the Dabrona de Maya Kasagit. Or is he bowing down the way Rashi says it is, the Kiluach Shelnar, the flow of the river is what he's bowing down to. The way that the Rabbeinu Chananel phrases it is, the Ikara Nar Kasagit, bowing down to the river as a whole. I mean, he's not bowing down to the particular water, he's bowing down to the source of the water, to the Sar of the water, whatever it is that includes all the water that's going to emanate from here, not just simply the water that's in front of us. That's the question. And then, depending on what you think, would mean that the water's gone and it's mutar, or he bowed down to the whole thing, and then it would be asur. Mar says, umi mitzaret. Can he really make the water asur by his bowing down to it, or even the river? Because va amar Rabbi Yochanan mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yotzadak, maim shel rabim in nasarim. Water that belongs to the public at large, you don't have a right to make asur. You don't have ownership over it to take away the ownership of the rabim by making it into a avodah zarah, bowing down to it. So here, where he bows down to the water, why should it matter? The water belongs to the public. So lo tzricha dekan neboi me'aro. It's a case where it comes up in someone's private land. The Baal Tosafot go on to say that even if it comes up in someone's private land, if you have a mayan that comes out of the ground, it belongs to the public at large as it moves from property to property. And each person along the way can take water out of it until it reaches the people further down. So over here too, it doesn't belong to one particular person, so why does that help you? So the Baal Tosfot suggests that it came up in a person's land, and all the water remained on his land. It never left his land, and therefore becomes a private water source or private mayan. In that case, if he bows down to it, he can impact it and make it into Avodah Zarah, because then it would be Nevad B'Mechubar Etzel Gavoa. And that's why the question is Gavoa, because we're dealing with something that is Mechubar. And given that, the question is, what is his intent when he's bowing down to the water? Now you have two studying, one side of the head there, which is that he's just bowing down to the water in front of us, or the possibility that he's bowing down to the entirety of the river, or the flow of the river, or the flow of the Mayan. In that case, he's now doing something Mechubar, which would be fine for Hejot, but for Hektesh, where Nevad B'Mechubar is problematic, based on what we saw from Rami Bar Chama, then that would make this Asur. And that's the question here. We don't know how to interpret his bowing down to the water, and that would have impact as to whether these would be okay for Nisuch HaMayim. And the Gemara leaves that as an unresolved issue. All right, the Mishnah continues now. Mishaya Beito Samuch Lavodat Kochavim. If a person has a house adjacent to the house of Avodah Zarah, Benafal, and then the wall that is between these two areas falls down, Asur Livnoto. He can't rebuild it because then he's going to be building a wall to the benefit of Avodah Zarah. Rashi says over here that one of the walls of his house was joined or shared with this Avodah Zarah, but Bayit Atzmo Nevad. And Rashi says that the house itself is being worshipped. This is real Avodah Zarah, not just Mishamshei Avodah Zarah. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Elchanan over here believes that the Bayit that we're speaking about here is a Mishamshei Avodah Zarah. It's a house into which they brought Avodah Zarah, and not Avodah Zarah itself. The truth is that in both instances you have the same problem, because you're not allowed to build the wall, whether it's Avodah Zarah on the other side, or whether it's Mishamshei Avodah Zarah. That later on in the Mishnah it might have some nafkamina, but because of the area of Tumah where there is a nafkamina, that's what pushes Rashi to indicate that it was actually that the house itself was being worshipped. So Ketzad Yaseh, what can he do in this instance to take care of his wall of his house so that he can actually live in it? Kones b'toch shelo arba amot. He backs the wall up into his house for amot, which is your standard type of harchoka. Then you want to distance yourself from something, you use arba amot. Although there are rishonim that suggest that it's influenced by the Gemara later on, which suggests that the only thing you need to make sure of is that Beit Avodat Kochavim can't get benefit from it. So if you can accomplish that with less than 4 amot, or you need more than 4 amot, that would be the case. 4 amot is just an example, and not necessarily a steadfast number. But Rashi believes that it's a fixed number here, and you have to back up arba amot, ubonet, and then he builds the wall. Shelo v'shel avodat kochavim, if the original wall was shared by him and the avodat kochavim, so that implies, and that's true of the first part of the Mishnah as well, that the wall was put up, or their sharing of the wall, was actually something that was done beheter originally, where they had a shutafot, and there was no avodah zarah over there, or however they entered into the situation was a situation of heter that later deteriorated when that house either became worship or they brought Avodah Zarah into that house. So since they started beheter, now he's in a situation where he really owns half of the wall, and he also owns half the space underneath the wall, because the wall is dividing between the two properties, and each one would have contributed half of the property for that wall. So then, nidon b'mechsa u'mechsa, the way Rashi reads this is, that requirement to distance yourself 4 amot away from the Beit Avodat Kochavim, you can utilize your half of the space that's taken up by the wall, that will be counted towards the Dalet Amot. So for instance, if the wall is 2 amot thick, and you have 1 amah of that half, then that 1 amah will contribute towards your 4 amot, and you don't have to back into your property 3 amot to accomplish the requirement of the 4 amot. Other than with regards to the actual materials over here, there you don't have a right to take any of them, because we don't say that there's breira, because generally when you're dealing with Yisurim Doraita, we don't say that retroactively we can determine which half belongs to each party after the fact, but rather we assume that it's all mixed together, and therefore there's joint ownership over all the property here, and you can't then get benefit by trading or bartering that property with the Isurim that are associated with the Beit Avodat Kochavim. Although the truth is, according to Rashi early on, we saw that the Tumah of Avodah Zarah was only a Din Derabonon, which would then open the possibility of Breira over here, unless you say that because of the Chumrat Avodat Kochavim, we don't apply Breira over here. Baal Tosafot point out that even without that, don't we have at least an opinion that we've spent time on and will spend more time on, that when it comes to an avodah zarah that collapses or breaks into pieces, those shvarim, according to one opinion, are not worshipped, and therefore they are batel. So why don't we say the same thing with regards to the wall here? The Bali Tosafot say, Hachem Eskina, Gonshaita, Abudat Kohavim Shal Yisrael. It belonged to a Jew, where there is no bittel. Oh, Shal Abudat Kohavim, Vishdach Vela Yisrael. Or it belongs to a non-Jew, but Jews worshipped it. Oh, B'Yushami Mukhi Kishkon Yishdach Velochol Evin Ve'Evin. And the Yushami sets it up that he bowed down to each stone. Chen Perish Akuntris. And that's what Rashi explained before, that they're actually worshipping the house itself, and not just Mishamshe Abudat Zarah in this case. Now, the Yushami does have an opinion over there, the possibility that you would be able to split the items, as long as you could clearly identify what was yours and what was theirs in terms of the raw materials in the wall. And the reason being is that both parties want that and have vested interest in the split being the way it was before. This other individual is bowing down to the wall, so he wants the pieces that he was bowing down to. And you want all the pieces on your side because you want the heter and not the isur. So if you can't identify which belonged to which wall, Yushalmi does say, and that's part of what Tosafot's quoting over here, does say that you have the ability to split even the avanim and etzim and afar, unlike what it seems from our Mishnah and the way that Rashi explains it, that that is not possible. The only thing you can do is use the space that was covered by the wall, take your half of that and use that towards your dalet amot. Avanav, etzav afaro, when it comes to the stones, the wood, and the afar that were associated with this wall, mitamim kisheretz. They are mitame like a sheret, shenemar, shaketz tishaktsenu, that a person has to despise it like a sheret, which is a similar language that is used by the sherets as well. And therefore there is some sort of parallel or loose gzereshava or gilui milta that tells us that this is treated in the same manner. Rabbi Kiva omer, kinida, shenemar tizareim kamod dava, that you disperse them or you rid yourself of them like the tumata nida. Say tomar lo, ma nida mitama b'masa, af abudat kochavim mitama b'masa. Based on that, he says, just like a nida is mitama, not only like a sheretz b'tumat maga, but as an additional tumah of tumat masa, and really beyond that tumah of tumat masa, but also tumat even misma, which means that even if she's not in direct contact with the item, she can make it tameh. And that tumah will apply to the avurat kochavim, and that's very likely what pushed Rashi to say that the beginning of the Mishnah is speaking about a case where they're worshipping the house itself, because these dinim of tumah are really only applicable, according to the Gemara and Shabbat, to avodah zarah itself, but not to mishamshei avodah zarah. And that's probably what compelled Rashi to say that they're actually worshipping the house, and not simply a case of mishamshei avodah zarah. Or others say that that might be the din with regards to tumah, but with regards to the Isur, there's no difference between a Beit Avodah Zarah and Mishamshei Avodah Zarah, and the wall would be a Isur, and you have the same requirement of backing up for a mot into your house. And again, if you believe like Rashi that all the Tumah of the Avodah Zarah is only Midrabanan in the end, then all of these Psukim, or these Giloi Milto or Gzerut Shavot, are really just an Asmachta Ba'alma, trying to indicate what compelled the Chachamim to go in this direction, or to assign this type of Tumah to Avodah Zarah. So now the Gemara asks, V'haka Mirvach, Lavodat Kochavim. In the end, if he pulls the wall back into his own property and leaves the space on the other side, then he's benefiting the Avodah Zarah, because now he's giving them more room. When he pulls into his property, he'll just move into the space that he left, and he's actually, in the end, benefiting them, instead of, in a sense, penalizing them by building the wall internally in his house and leaving them that extra space. So Amar V'Chanina Misura, no, that's not the case. He still keeps utility of that area that he pulls back the wall for. Davidai Beit HaKiseh. He makes it into a bathroom, which has a two-sided effect, one of which is that he's still utilizing the space, but in addition to that, he's utilizing the space for something that is degrading or almost affront to having something holy up against this, or having the Beit Avodah Zarah up against it, and by doing so, he makes sure that they don't utilize that space that he's pulled back the wall for. So then the Gemara says, Baha boy, it's niuta. How can he make it into a Beit HaKiseh? He needs privacy over there. He's not going to get privacy, especially if the Beit Avodah Zarah doesn't build a wall. But even if they do build a wall, you'll be limited privacy because people are going to be on the other side of that wall, maybe even have windows into that area, and he's not going to have the privacy necessary for a Beit HaKiseh, for a bathroom. Davile Beit HaKiseh Delilah. He makes it a nighttime Beit HaKiseh, and not a daytime Beit HaKiseh. V'amar Mahar. Don't we have a memory in the Gemara in Brachot, that Ezud Sanua? Who is a person who is considered to be tzanua, modest in their behavior? Hanifna belaila b'makom shenifna bayom. As a person who relieves himself at night in the same place that he relieves himself during the day. So that means that this place is not valid or proper to use during the day, then a person who is really modest wouldn't use it at night either. Even though we established over there, it didn't mean that you have to distance yourself at night like you do during the day. During the day where people are around and when it's light out, you have to move further away in order to get that privacy. So when we say that you have to do at night like you do during the day, we're not saying that you have to move the same distance away, but rather we are saying that you have to do it in the same fashion, which is that the chachamim over there prescribe the manner in which one goes to relieve themselves, how much they uncover in front, how much they uncover in the back, and even though at night where there aren't other people around, still that person performs in a tzanua fashion, a modest fashion, like they would have done during the day. Miu, tzniut avay lemevat. In the end, you do need tzniut. You still have to have a certain amount of modesty and privacy, and that's just not afforded by this area that you're leaving as a beit kisei, even if it is a beit kisei at night. So the Gemara in hand says, the avid le the tinokot. He makes it a bathroom for the young children who don't need that type of modesty or privacy. Inami de gadir le behizme behiget. Or the other alternative is that he doesn't make it into a bathroom, but rather he fills in the area, plants their items that are thorns and thistles or low shrubbery, so it doesn't allow a person to utilize the space, or the equivalent in the modern time of putting barbed wire over there. You make the space completely unusable, either because you make it into a bathroom or because you've set it up in a way that makes it unusable. And that's how you protect against the Avodah Zarah getting benefit from your pulling the wall back into your property. So now we begin the next Mishnah, Shlosha Batim Heim. And as Rashi explains over here, Le'inyan Bitul Avodat Kochavim. That's about how you can nullify Avodah Zarah. There are three different types of houses, and each one of these houses requires a different level of bitul because of the extent of the Avodah Zarah. Bayit shebana'o mitchila levodat kochavim, a house that's built in its origins or from the outset to be for Avodah Zarah. And as Rashi points out over here, we're speaking about a house that was built originally to be worshipped. Similar to what Rashi said in the previous Mishnah, but you will deem it a bayit atzmo. You're worshipping the house itself. And if it was built by a Jew, there would be no possibility of bitul. If it was built by an Oved Kochavim, if he's mevatel it, then it'll be fine. Otherwise, it remains asur. And the reason Rashi didn't explain it as mishamshe avodah zarah is because if he created it or built it for the purpose of being a mishamesh of avodah zarah, then it would not be asur until you actually are mishamesh, that you actually utilize it. Just preparing it or getting it ready is not enough. Although the Ravid does suggest over here that the fact that it's built for the purpose of housing the Avodah Zarah from the outset makes it, instead of being just a plain Mishamshe Avodah Zarah, makes it into almost an extension of the Avodah Zarah, assuming that the Avodah Zarah of a Goy is Asur immediately, even before he worships it, and then if it could have impact that even if it was Mishamshe Avodah Zarah, there'd be Asur. The simpler way to read the Mishnah, the way the Rashi reads it, is that we're speaking about a house that's going to be worshipped, and the house was built originally or from the outset to be Avodah Zarah. So therefore, Arizah Asur. That remains Asur. Again, unless the Goy is Mevatel it, or if it was a Jew's house, or was worshipped by a Jew, then it would be Asur Lomit. Saido V'kairo L'Avodat Kochavim. Now, if he plastered it, or he drew pictures, or stuccoed it, L'Shem Avodah Zarah, V'chidesh, and in doing so, he added on a layer to the house, or he created an outer layer, or a surface upon which this was done, notel mashechidesh, and all you have to do is remove the new items or the excess that was put there. And here, you don't even need the goy to take it down, because even if a Jew took it down, it would work. So here, you're not trying to do it through bitul, you're just trying to remove the avodah zarah. The house itself remains mutar, because that wasn't worship. It was only the addition that was put on, or this new plastering or pictures that were put up that were worshipped. So if you eliminate that, then the house itself is completely mutar. And so even if a Jew does it, the house itself will be fine. And that you can see in Rashi, which is, even by Yisrael of Atlo, Yotel Mashachidesh, mutar abayit, va'afal pi shelo bitlo. That's even without the bitol of the Oveid Kochavim, or afilo haitash shel Yisrael Mumar, or even if it belongs to Yisrael Mumar, where there is no bitol, nevertheless over here, it's fine. She'in avodat kochavim, shela b'teila, hacha batil, she'in yasar lachidush. Over here, everything is batel, because the only thing that is problematic is the addition that was put on, or the layer that was put on top. Ba'u chidush, shebatel, asur b'hana'a, le'olam. So that chidush will be problematic, but the house itself will remain fine. Although the Tosafot seems to suggest that if he intended to worship not only the extra stuff that was put there, but the bayit itself, that would make the bayit the sur as well. Although other Rishonim believe that that's only true if he actually does worship it. It's not enough that he intends to worship it, but he has to actually worship the house in order to make it a sur. And then the last house of the three, which is Yichnis l'tocha avodat kochavim ve'otziah. He brings avodah zarah into the house and then takes it out. Harizem mutar. That's because the house was only mishamshei avodah zarah. And the bayit itself, the house itself, he has no intention to worship. And he actually also did not designate it as a tashmish of avodah zarah because he put it in and took it out. As Rashi notes over here, l'tzil the tashmish avodah kochavim el'sha'ah. Yichnis l'tocha avodat kochavim. He only intended for it to be there for a short period of time and not permanently. Although the Ramban disagrees with Rashi and says that even if the person brought the avodah zarah in there and planned to leave it there permanently, or did leave it there for a long duration, and of course, while the avodah zarah is there, the house is problematic because it's mishamshei avodah zarah. But once the goy is motziah, he takes it out of the house. Rashi simply says that that was the intent originally, and that's why there's no problem here. But the Ramban says that motziah is when he takes it out and doesn't intend to return it to that area. That's actually mivatel this as a mishamshei avodah zarah, and it's no longer considered or classified as a mishamshei avodah zarah. And is mutar even without bitul, because there's an implicit bitul when he takes it out with the intent of not bringing it back again. Now the Gemara says, Amarav, amishtachavela bayit asuro. Person who bows down to a house makes it asur. Amar kasavar, from here it would be clear that Rav believes that a house is considered to be talush, ul v'sof chibro kitalush dami. That something that was originally an item that was not mechubar the karka, not attached to the ground, and later was then made into something that was attached to the ground, the raw materials that were used to build the house were talush, were items that were detached from the ground. But in the end, when you build the house, you now attach it to the ground. But if Rav is saying that when you buy down to it, you can make it into something that is asur, we already know because of the harimik baot, if it's mechubar the karka, you can't make it asur. So what you see from this is that something that was originally detached and then attached afterwards, Rav considers that to be detached, and that's why you can make it asur. Ha-nan bana'ot nan. Doesn't our Mishnah say that in order for it to be asur, it's bina'o, it has to be built for the purpose of avodah zarah? Bina'o, afo pishlo ishtachavelo, which makes it sound like just by building it, then it is asur, or the fact is that you need to build it with the intent for avodah zarah in order for it to become asur, but nothing to do with ishtachavaya. Gemara answers that there are actually two ways to make it asur. Afo bina'o, afo pishlo ishtachavelo. If you build it with the intent for it to be avodah zarah, even though you don't bow down to it, it's asur. Or if you bow down to the house and make it avodah zarah, even though it wasn't built for that originally, both of those are problematic. How can you claim that there are three types of houses? There are actually four types of houses now. There's a house that's built originally for avodah zarah. There's a house that you bow down to that makes it into avodah zarah, even though it wasn't built originally for avodah zarah. And then the Saido v'Kairo and the Mishamshei Avodah Zarah would make four in the Mishnah. Why are you only counting three? Kevan delinyan bitul banavi shtachavachad kochoshivle. So because when it comes to bitul, the din of binao, building it originally for Avodah Zarah, or v'shtachavelo, both of those have the same rule, which is that if it's a goyis, he would have to be mevatel, or if it's a Jews, be asur lo mit. Therefore, chad kochoshivle. That's why they consider it to be one. And that's what influenced Rashi to explain the Mishnah, speaking about a case of bitul. Because you can see in the end, the Gemara says bitul is what's governing what's listed here in the Mishnah. And that's why there are three items and not four items, because the bitul of two of them are exactly the same, even though they become asur in different ways. Now the next Mishnah says, Shalosh Avanim Heim. There are three different types of stones. Evin Shechatzva Mitchela Bimus, a stone that is quarried in its origins for it to be used as a bimus, which will loosely translate as an altar. Harizu asura. That's asura immediately. Which means that you cannot be mevatalet if it is a Jew's avodah zarah. And if it's a goy's avodah zarah, he would have to be mevatalet in order to remove it. And as Rashi knows once again over here, that when they make the evan that they quarry out as the avodah zarah originally, it's because they intend to worship this altar, this bimus, as the avodah zarah itself. It's not simply that it's being designated to be used to service the avodah zarah. It's a case where they're going to worship the bimus itself. And in all of these instances, you can see the Balei Tosafot second that view of Rashi and say, V'yofa kivein. That Rashi, when he says that all these instances, like by the bayit shebina'o lekach and the bimus shechatzva lekach, all of these are instances where he's going to worship the actual item and not a case where it's going to be a mishamesh l'avodah zarah. Saira v'kaida, or Saida v'kaira, the shame of that kochavim, notel mashe siyed v'kier, then you remove that which was plastered on there, or that which was colored or decorated on there, umuteret, then that stone is fine. That's very similar to what we saw before in the house, that whatever addition you put on there, that you can take off. And once again here, Rashi points out that the Jew just has to remove the excess that was placed on the stone, and that would make it batel me'eleha, because you've removed the part that is avodah zarah, and the coarse stone or bimus that's under it is not problematic. Hemid aleha avodat kochavim, if the altar or pedestal is being used to support or have avodah zarah stand on it, v'silka, and then you remove the avodah zarah, harizo mutaret. That avodah zarah is totally mutar, that bimus then is mutar, because it's no longer in service of the avodah zarah. And once again here, Rashi explains, with regards to placing it on the bimus, is the fisha'a, that he does it only temporarily, but v'lo yiksa'at even the bimus, but he doesn't designate the altar to be a bimus for this avodah zarah, and so therefore when he removes it, that removal is indicative of the fact that it was only used temporarily and wasn't permanently made to be a bimus, but implied in Rashi is that if that was the intent, then the bimus would be problematic, even after he took the avodah zarah off of it. And again, the Ramban, who in the previous Mishnah argued on that, would argue here as well as to whether when you put it on there for a long duration or even permanently, when you take it off, can then you remove the status of the Mishamshi Avodah Zarah, which the Ramban said you could by the house, would also be possible here. Tosfot over here asks, why do you have to quarry the stone in order to bow down to it for Biasur? Even if you stand up a stone in order for it to be worshipped, that's enough to make it Asur. So the Baal Tosafot actually distinguish and say that the truth is if Zakfa, that's not a significant action, and therefore you would need the bowing down to make it Asur. Whereas by the case of Chatzva, where you quarry the stone out, that's a significant enough action that it is considered to be a sur just through the chatziva without the ishtachavaya. Or in essence, what the Baal HaTosafot are saying is this is the exact same thing like Rav's statement in the previous Mishnah, which is that there is also ishtachava and there's also bnia. And so the Tosafot in the end says the reason the Gemara didn't ask over here is because it was captured by the Gemara before, that you need ishtachavaya when you don't have a significant action. And when you do have a significant answer, like bnia or chatzva, those will be in and of themselves problematic or create the isur in and of themselves. On the other hand, the Ramban says that the Gemara brought it only by the case of bayit, because there is a big chiddush that the bayit, when you bow down to it, is considered a sur because that deems the house to be talush or the sof chibro, to have a classification of talush. And that is a significant halachic statement. But over here, where the stone is already talush, it's obvious that if you bow down to something that's talush, that it's going to be a sur. So Amar Rabbi Ami Vihu Shisied Vikier Bigufash 11. That's only if he decorates it, plasters it, stuccoes it by actually carving into the stone itself. It's not enough that it's just a surface layer on top of the stone. You actually have to etch or carve into the stone for this to be significant. Va Dumya de Bayit Nan. Doesn't the Mishnah seem to be parallel to the previous Mishnah that spoke about a house? Ubabayit la bigufehu umitzvar. And by the case of the bayit, there he's not plastering and etching into the stone or cutting into the stone. He's plastering as a layer on top or as a surface. And it's still a sur. So my answer is bayit nami ike bene orbe. That by the house, there is space there because the stones aren't all completely adjacent to each other. There's gapping between the stones. And so between the stones or between the bricks, there's space that the plaster fills in. But we never see that specification in the Mishnah before. And therefore the Gemara says, Miloskina Deshaya. How do you know that that's the case, that there's gapping or holes there? Maybe it's a case where the wall is completely smooth, or maybe even has a first layer of plaster there. Father Shiye. And then he went on top of that, or plastered on top of that. So in that case, it's not filling in anything. And how can you compare the case here to there, and suggest that you have to carve into the stone? Eliki Itmar de Rabbi Ami, the Indian Bitul Itmar. Rabbi Ami's statement is made with regards to the Bitul. The Avagav, the Siyad Vikir, Begufa Shalev, and even though he's plastered and stuccoed into the actual stone, and he's carved into the stone, kinata mashachidesh shaper dami. When you take off whatever addition is made there, that's enough over here. Maudetema, the maudetema, because what I would have thought was, kevin shesied vikier, the gufa shaleven, since he carved or etched into the stone itself, kevin shechatzva mitchila levodat kochavim damya. It's as if, or comparable to a stone that's quarried in its origins for the purpose of avodah zarah. Because here you're taking action on the stone. So maybe that's significant enough to designate it as if you've got to restart now. And that makes it that it was designated from its outset for avodah zarah. But tzitzar kula, and therefore the whole thing would be asur. Kamash malan, that's not the case. Although this little statement here of the Gemara is qualified by the Balei Tosafot, where he brings the Ri, and the Ri says, lav davka no tel mashachidesh. You can't just take off the plaster or the stucco that's on top, or the new stuff, and no more. Because he does have to remove the etching in the stone. You have to either drill through the stone from edge to edge to take out what he took off, or you have to slice away the face of the stone where that etching was. So you can't just remove the outer layer or the surface layers that are put on there, but even the etchings of the stone have to be eliminated somehow, and that's what has to be done here. But the Kamash Malan is that you don't lose the whole stone, or the remainder of the stone is not problematic. It's only the etchings and the additional plaster and stucco on top of it that are problematic. Although both the Mari Landa and the Rabbi Akiva Eiger point you to the Tshuvat HaRama, where the Rama in two Tshuvot, in Kuf Yud Dalet and Kuf Tet Vav, goes on to explain that he thinks that the Ri is not speaking in the Maskana of the Gemara. Rather, the Rama suggests that the Ri statement is in the Havami of the Gemara, when the assumption of Rabbi Ami's statement is V'hu Shisied V'kied B'gufo Shel Evin, because the Gemara at that point felt that if you just put siyud v'kiur on top of the oven, it wouldn't have impacted the oven at all. The oven would be asur at all. And of course, then if you took off what you had on top, that the oven would mutar because it was never asur. And therefore, Rabbi Ami comes along to tell you, no, it's a more significant action in the gufash oven. And that's why the oven is asur. By the time we get to the conclusion of the Gemara, where it compares it to bayit, the Gemara assumes that even when you put siyud v'kiur on the oven, that's enough to make the stone asur. And then if the stone is a sur, the removal of the siyud and the kiur would be sufficient to remove that iser from the oven. Therefore, there's no need to remove any of the oven because Mishnah is not speaking about a case where he etched into the oven itself. Implied in that is if he did etch into the oven, it still would require that etching to be removed because that's part of the chidush that would make the oven a sur. But kiur, the siyud by themselves are enough to make it a sur, and you have to remove them to release the oven, as opposed to what we thought in the Havamina, that kiur and siyud were not significant enough to make the oven asur, and only the kiur and the siyud would be problematic. That is because in the Havamina of the Gemara, the assumption is that if you had sid that was just on top of the oven, that the oven would not be asur at all, and therefore it wouldn't be a chiddush to tell us that you just need to take off the stuff on top. In the Maskana, where the Gemara says that it's dome lebayit, that means that even when there's just sid or kiur on top, that does have impact on the oven. But the solution to that is simply to remove the kiur and the siyud from it, but it's not speaking about a case where they etched into the oven itself. Okay, we're going to end here on the bottom of Mem Zayin Amud Bet.